Tamari, yeah. Welcome to First Up to Tahi Kiti Oho for Rahina. That's Monday, the 22nd of April. Ko Nathan Rarere Aho. Coming up, we get the latest honours, Ralph, from our correspondent Sarah Coates, who's in Tel Aviv. The Ukraine aid package has people talking from North America to Europe, so that's where we're going to go. Mitch McCann in the USA, NITA has reaction from Europe. Leonard Powell went along to the Helberg Games, met some incredible young athletes with disabilities. And we're going to meet the music reviewer who listened to all 68 Tate Music Award entries, but just once. I mean, is that fair?
No, not really. And there were some albums where I had to say, look, after one listen, I can't wrap my head around this. What I was trying to do was just let people have a read of what I'd done and then work out which ones they might want to dip into.
Morning, everybody. Welcome to First Up. We start in North America with News Hub's correspondent there, Mitch McCann. Kia ora, Mitch. How you doing?
I'm well, mate. How are you?
Very good. The big news, though, the passing of this Ukraine aid package. So will this be a game changer, do you think, for the conflict?
Well, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is really happy about it. He's been pleading with the US to pass this spending bill for months now. It was delayed, and they finally have done that over the weekend. The spending bill passed 311 votes to 112, with some members of Congress waving Ukrainian flags while the votes were being counted. Now, this has been rather controversial here in the US, particularly because a group of Republicans, and in fact, many everyday Americans as well, have this view that issues like border security are not being dealt with here in the US, and they find that they shouldn't be sending all this money to Europe when they have these problems back home in the US. But regardless, they passed the bill over the weekend and now heads to the Senate. It will pass there and then Joe Biden will sign it off. Now, the $61 billion US dollars as part of this bill will replenish weapons and ammunition systems and give Ukraine loans that they won't have to pay back. And Zelensky has called the support vital. Joe Biden says members of Congress have answered history's call in helping Ukraine. And really, it was just last weekend, the head of Ukraine's military warned that the battlefield situation in the east of the country had significantly worsened. So they're really hopeful that this money will get there soon and they can help push back against Russia in Ukraine.
Money for the other major conflict too. The House of Representatives also handing out billions of military aid to Israel. What's being said about that?
Yeah, well, the House passed another bill there, $26.3 billion in assistance to Israel. That will have to be signed off by the Senate and the President as well. Now, that measure was passed more overwhelmingly than the other one in Ukraine, 366 votes to 58. Congress really wanting to support Israel. They've got the issues with Iran that we've talked about in the last couple of weeks, so they want to secure that area. And that comes despite the fact the US has been rather unhappy with what Israel has been doing in Gaza, but they still want to support them with weapons, given what's going on in Iran. So two major pieces of legislation passed this weekend.
Let's head into the courts of New York City. The judge, the jury, has been selected in Donald Trump's trial. When does the actual thing get underway?
Gets underway tomorrow morning. Right. So it technically started last week, but as you say, it was plagued by these issues of finding an impartial jury that had no bias for or against Donald Trump. So they've found a jury now. They think it's impartial. And tomorrow we're going to hear the crux of the case. So remember, Donald Trump is accused of falsifying business records to cover up hush money payments to the adult film star Stormy Daniels. And Trump has done everything he can do, Nathan, to avoid this situation he's found himself in. So he's filed every motion in court he can to have it delayed or thrown out. At one point, a couple of weeks ago, he even sued the judge who's overseeing the case to try and stop it from happening. And outside court, he has been rallying against this case. He called it an assault on America. And he's even been complaining about the temperature of the courtroom.
Someone's mucking with the thermostat that he's got during his trial. And he's also not happy with a lot of news coming out of the court either. What's he mad at reporters? What are they reporting?
He's very mad. Rolling Stone is reporting that Donald Trump has been raging over everything that's been reported inside the court, particularly an article that came out from the New York Times that suggested Donald Trump had fallen asleep in court and that his mouth was slack and then he was sort of jolted awake when his lawyers were talking to him. He's very unhappy about that. And he's also unhappy about the fact or the way he's been portrayed in some of these court sketches, whether or not they think he's too skinny or overweight. He's very unhappy with the way he looks in the court sketches. And really, that's one of the only ways to get images out of the courtroom during the day is these court sketches. So he's very unhappy about that. And he was also pretty disappointed, you could say, this weekend because one of his rallies in North Carolina had to be cancelled. Of course, he has to be in court during the proceedings for the coming weeks. He can't be out on the campaign trail. So the few opportunities he has, he wants to make the most of. And there was a storm in North Carolina over the weekend. He had to cancel that rally, so he'll be back in New York now for this trial getting underway tomorrow morning.
However, the House of Representatives here voting to ban TikTok if it doesn't cut ties with China. TikTok says, that ban's going to trample the free speech of 175 million US users. It's pretty hard to try and trump free speech over there, isn't it? Isn't that the get out of jail card for everything?
Yeah, it seems that way. I think Donald Trump's using that one as well. But what's really interesting being over here is kind of watching the campaign that TikTok has launched, particularly on television. They've launched ads everywhere during the news or on every channel that we watch, promoting TikTok and how it helps small business. It's really interesting. But as you say, over the weekend, there was a vote in the House of Representatives to ban TikTok, and it passed 360 votes to 58 on the floor. That'll go to the Senate, and then Joe Biden will sign it off. But what will happen here is that TikTok, it has 9 months to divest from its owner, ByteDance, this Chinese-owned company. The concern here in the US is that ByteDance can give American data to the Chinese Communist Party. There doesn't seem to be any obvious proof of that, but it's something that they don't want to share the House Intelligence Committee. And so they'll have 9 months to divest from ByteDance. And if they don't, TikTok will be banned from the App Store and the Android Store so that people in the United States cannot download TikTok. There'll be no more silly dances here or anything like that. It'll be shut down. So I think there'll be a lot of upset people about it, but the US government says it's for the best.
All right. Thank you very much. Mitch McCann there, New Subs North America correspondent in New York. It is 11 and a half past five. Last week's trading of barbs between Iran and Israel has come to an end for now. Israel's limited action on Friday targeted areas in the Isfahan region. The Iranians say that little damage was done. Now, I spoke with our correspondent, Sarah Coates, in Israel, and began by asking her if the region feels like it's a bit on edge.
Hello there, Nathan. Certainly, there is a lot of tension here in this region. I would sort of say it is quietly tense. People are really going about their daily business here in Israel, but there is always this threat that something may happen. I've been speaking to people on the street, and basically they've just been saying to me they're waiting for the next kind of escalation. And this, of course, comes after this direct confrontation that we've been seeing over the past week or so between Israel and Iran. But what it appears now is that this confrontation between the two sides has gone back to that usual shadow war. What we are seeing are these constant proxy attacks, Iranian proxy attacks. We're talking here specifically Hezbollah on Israel's northern border. This group is just really raising the escalation level, firing more rockets, firing more explosive-laden drones over that border into Israel. And this is really what we can expect now. We can expect Iran to call on its proxies in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, and in Yemen to really intensify attacks against Israel. Certainly, there is, of course, concern that there may be some sort of a retaliation by the Islamic Republic after this very limited strike that we saw a few days ago, which is, of course, being attributed to Israel. But given the scope of that and just given how limited it was, what it did really give is Iran the opportunity to save face. And it also shows that Israel actually does have the capacity to be able to strike inside Iran.
Well, they've got more capacity there. The US House voting to supply military aid to Israel. What was the reaction there where you are?
Certainly. Well, there's a reaction here from the Prime Minister, of course, very positive reactions here in Israel, given this was passed. Obviously, it still needs to be sent to the Senate and then is expected to be signed off by the US President Joe Biden. We heard from Netanyahu. He said that this is much appreciated, that it demonstrates strong bipartisan support for Israel and Western civilization. But really, there is a lot of concern, especially among House progressives there in the United States, that this actually may then give Israel more capacity to be able to move down into that southern Gazan city of Rafah, which, of course, has been causing a lot of international concern. We do need to remember, though, that we've really heard over the past few days from a lot of senior U.S. Officials, including the U.S. Secretary of State, Antony Blinken. He spoke just on Friday at the G7 saying that the U.S. cannot support a major military operation in Rafah. And he also added that the United States still has not seen a plan. But in saying this, Israel is very adamant that this needs to happen, that it will happen. Israel says that there are still four Hamas battalions stationed down in that area. But this is an area that, as we know and as we've been speaking about, it was declared as a safe zone some months ago by the Israeli military. They actually told these people to go down there. And there are currently 1.3 or more million internally displaced Palestinians sheltering there.
Also, the Israel Defense Force, they've gone and stormed several locations in the West Bank. Can you tell us what do we know about that action there?
Certainly. Well, a 50-hour Israeli raid has actually just wrapped up in the Nur al-Shams refugee camp. According to Palestinian media, 14 people have been killed, many others wounded. The Israelis are calling this a counter-terror operation. They say they killed 10 gunmen and arrested 8 wanted Palestinians. Now, we are seeing pictures coming in of pretty significant destruction in this area, roads ripped up, infrastructure ruined. A number of other separate incidents also today. There are reports right now that the IDF has shot dead 2 teenagers just north of Hebron. The military says that these were 2 terrorists. They arrived at a junction and tried to stab Israeli soldiers. While in another part of the West Bank, the northern part of the West Bank, a manhunt is now underway right now as we speak. Apparently there was a Palestinian assailant, this is what the military is saying, that shot over the green line from the West Bank into Israeli territory at a kibbutz. We do understand that a building was damaged slightly. No one killed, but right now there are major roadblocks happening around that region as the military try and find this so-called assailant.
Sarah Coates there with us from Israel. Sarah, thank you very much for your report here at First Up. Stay safe.
Thank you.
17 past 5 here at First Up on RNZ National with me, Nathan Rarere. We go to mainland Europe now in Germany. It's Nita Blake-Persing. Kia ora, Nita. How are you doing?
Morning, Nathan. I'm well, thank you. How about yourself?
I'm good, all right. So the Ukraine aid bill, top of the mind today, obviously. How has the passing of that bill by the US House of Representatives been received in Ukraine and also in wider Europe?
Well, in Ukraine, undoubtedly, huge relief there from troops, civilians, leaders. It's taken a really long time to get this point, but what a huge boost to their defence efforts and also to morale, I think. President Zelensky himself has said it's going to send a powerful message to Russia that Washington stands by Kyiv. And another politician leader, head of Ukraine's Foreign Affairs Committee, he's described it as a historic decision that will definitely save lots of lives and give us strength. And I do think that's a big part of this funding boost, the psychological aspect of it, the morale boost that it will give. It's been a long winter. There haven't been a lot of gains, in fact, some losses. So it's offered something in the way of hope as well. And it's not just Ukrainian citizens. There have been a lot of people taking to social media to give thanks and really express their gratitude. But a lot of EU leaders very pleased as well, with a lot of countries here, as well as NATO and the EU itself, big financial backers of Ukraine. This is further support for them. So, Germany's Chancellor, he's signalled his praise. NATO Secretary, the EU Chair, Ursula von der Leyen, everyone very pleased with it on this part of the world.
That's one side of the fence. What about the reaction from the Kremlin, though?
Perhaps predictably less than impressed, and in fact seemingly quite angry about this funding. The Kremlin spokesperson, Dmitry Peskov, said the decision will make the United States of America richer, further ruin Ukraine, and result in the deaths of even more Ukrainians, the fault of the Kyiv regime. So not mincing any words there. And then you've got Dmitry Medvedev, the former Russian president and current deputy chair of Russia's Security Council. He's said this new aid was Russophobic and would exacerbate the number of victims of this war. Again, possibly predictably, but that's how things are sitting from their perspective.
Okay, well, two other people being Russophobic, apparently. Two men being held in Germany on suspicion of spying, oh no, for Russia. Why were they there? What are they up to?
Well, allegedly, they were planning to sabotage Germany's military aid for Ukraine. So saying, you know, Germany's one of these big backers for Ukraine, and they wanted to undermine that and go after that on behalf of Russia. So they're dual German-Russian nationals. They've been detained in the southern state of Bavaria earlier this week on suspicion of spying for Russia. Apparently, they'd been scouting out US military facilities and other sites. There's one main suspect. He's accused of plotting an explosion, arson, and maintaining contact with Russian intelligence. He's also apparently fought for a Russian proxy armed force in the past. Then there's a second suspect. He's accused of helping this person since last month to try and identify potential targets for the attack. German media are reporting that a US Army facility in the state of Bavaria was spied on. And last year, the US actually sent dozens of Abrams tanks to Bavaria for Ukrainian soldiers to train on. So that could be linked there. But according to prosecutors, the main suspect is alleged to have discussed potential sabotage operations. So that's what's been going on there.
Let's go to the Canary Islands. But in fact, no, let's not go to the Canary Islands, because apparently the locals say tourism numbers are making the islands just unlivable for them.
That's exactly right. They're saying stay away. Well, stay away right now. They are saying, let's put a pause on this and figure out what is going on, because it's these eight islands. They're just off Africa's northwest coast, but they're actually part of Spain, and they are wildly popular, I know, with a lot of German tourists, but apparently the UK are also, those are the two main places people are looking for sunshine from. So they've been heading there in droves, and now people are saying stop. And it's kind of all the usual stuff. You know, it massively pushes up local accommodation costs, short-term accommodation, Airbnb, all of that stuff, but also huge strain on the environment, they say. So up to 50,000 people have turned out to protest this weekend. There were also demonstrations in Madrid and Barcelona in support. People aren't saying, you know, cancel tourism altogether, but they just want a massive shake-up of the strategy at the moment, saying it's unaffordable and environmentally unsustainable, and that they've got to sort out a better way of doing this. So they're all protesting under this banner, the Canaries have a limit. They're not, you know, as I say, entirely against it, but they're, yeah, Got to do something different, they're saying. Some of the members of the group have actually taken things a step further, and they're on a hunger strike, have been for a week, to protest a massive luxury development on one of the islands, Tenerife. So, yes, if you are thinking of heading there, maybe rethink it just now.
Okay, I will. Thank you very much, Nita Blake-Person, who joined us from Germany. Twenty-three past five, Nathan Rarere here at First Up, Tuatahi Kitihau for RNZ National. Still to come, the Minister of Fruit and Veg standing by, and we heard from a music critic so committed he listened to all of it. All of it. You'll find out all of what soon.
I've got a lovely bunch of coconuts. There they are, standing in the air. Big ones, small ones, some as big as your head.
Well, it's not really a week. It doesn't really start until the Minister of Fruit and Veg is here. And here he is, fresh from the markets, Glenn Forsyth. Kia ora, man. How are you?
Oh, very well, Nathan. Yourself?
I'm pretty good. I see that Leader Brands are out there saying check out our awesome new facility there in Gisborne.
Oh, it was a big thrill last Friday in Gisborne, for sure, for Leader Brand, when the Minister for Regional Development, Shane Jones, opened their covered production facility. And it's not small either. It's an 11-hectare mega greenhouse. I love Leader Brand, founded by Mr. Murray McPhail nearly 50 years ago. Now, these guys are 100% passionate and committed to our horticulture industry, growing also in Pukekohe, Matamata and Canterbury. Leader Brand have invested heavily in their salad processing business, so a greenhouse made sense, protecting crops from weather, reducing fertiliser and water usage, and supplying leafy greens year-round. Now, a test here on brand recognition, Nate. What Leader Brand product do you like?
Salad.
Salad, yes. Yeah, that's right. They're good at that. Their selling machine in Wellington, Richard Warwick, who I first met 32 years ago, has said recent favourable growing conditions has meant good volumes and quality currently of broccoli, their lighter and sweeter tasting lettuce in their famous branded bags, wild rocket and baby spinach from their covered facility, and their range of slaws, they like to call them, referring to all the ready-made packets of different coleslaws they offer. Now, the wild rocket, that's been a new one for them in a purple Leader Brand bag, and retailers describe it as exceptional quality with a peppery flavour and more zing than flat leaf rocket, which has been the main rocket available in the past.
Yeah.
So you try that one now.
I remember when rocket first arrived and everyone's that was mind blowing when that came in. Now we've got even more hardcore rocket. All right. What's good in vegetables this week?
Yeah, the great value in veggies continues into this week, the second week of the school holidays, so look out for bargains. Your best greens are celery, broccoli, lettuce and cabbage with leeks, wongbok and cauliflower. They're not far behind either. The potato range is impressive. Agrias, Vivaldi Gold, Oakley's Golden Gourmet and Perlers, they all won't disappoint. King Sweeties, courgettes, cherry tomatoes and late season sweet corn, they're all available. Not forgetting either pumpkin, butternut, carrots, onions, red kumara and white button or Swiss brown mushrooms, including the shiitake variety, so you can see why we are wondering how we are going to eat all these vegetables. Now, a two-pronged question for you. What would you do with soft broccoli, and do you like mushy peas?
Second one, no. Normally, what I do with soft broccoli is I get a colander and then I rig up a device with elastic so I can launch it anywhere apart from into a dish. But what you can do is you blend it. You can sort of blend that, can't you, into a, if you're making soup, sort of, it's lovely in soup, broccoli. I do love broccoli.
Exactly. Now, with many thanks again to Richard for this one, sauté some diced onion and crushed garlic in a pot with olive oil, and then add the broccoli and frozen peas a little later and mash once all cooked through and softened. Then cut up a punnet of cherry tomatoes, he hasn't stopped yet, and slow cook in balsamic vinegar, olive oil, a pinch of brown sugar till reduced, and add over pan-fried fish, which is sitting on, you guessed it, a bed of pea and broccoli mash. So, yeah, what do you think, Nate? If you don't like that, I'll give you Richard's number and you can have a go.
Okay. Very, very quickly, fruit. What's our fruit, Glenn? Sorry, I've talked us over time.
Yes, we haven't mentioned the Toyota Corolla bit much this year, have we? In fact, it hasn't even hit Fruit of the Week this year. Yeah. But one of New Zealand's favourite apples is in great supply. That's the Royal Gala. All colours of yummy seedless grapes are here from Chile, and we have been treated well still with some late-season Hass avocados and blueberries. Mm. Some Butte and season lines available in New Zealand limes, pears, and, of course, Fijoas. New season Maya lemons have started, so an ideal time now to enjoy that refreshing health kick. Hot drink each night of those with Manuka honey. And these new season easy peel Satsuma mandarins are something else too. So tasty, not like late in their season when they get puffy and lose flavour. So definitely put Mandy's on your list from now, Mr. Nathan. Have a lovely week.
Well done, beautiful. Thank you very much, Glenn Forsyth. Good man, Raiders man.
Sing your roller, polar, polar, penny a pig.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Today's Earth Day. It's April the 22nd. That was first celebrated in 1970. Let's get into some other happenings on this day, April 22nd. There's a man by the name of Aaron Spelling. He was born in 1923. He made Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat, Dynasty, Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place, and songs with great theme tunes with a disco-y beat with some guy with a wah-wah pedal and a bass on his chest. This was my favourite of all the Aaron Spelling theme songs. This one was From Heart to Heart. Go! Drive that car, Stephanie Faust. All right. Also born on this day in 1936, Glen Campbell. There we are. Happy, that was a happy birthday to him on this day. Celebrating birthdays today, Amber Heard turns 38, Peter Frampton 74, Jack Nicholson is 87. On this day in 1969, John Lennon changed his middle name from Winston to Ono. Yeah. So he was Joel, wasn't he? I guess it would have been his tag. On this day in 1969, a British yachtsman called Sir Robin Knox Johnson won the Golden Globe race. Nothing to do with movies, but he was indeed the first solo non-stop circumnavigator of the world. Yeah. On this day in 1977, optical fibre was first used to carry live telephone traffic, and a big day for the Southpaws. On this day in 1994, Michael Mora defeated Evander Holyfield for the title of boxing heavyweight champion, became the first left-handed boxing champ of the world. There you are. And those are your happenings on this day, April the 22nd. Cash rules everything around me. Queen, get the money. Dollar, dollar bill, yo. Joining us now from the business team, it's Anand Zaki. How you doing?
Kia ora. I am well, thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm good, but I'm finding out the stories. The story has, news has reached me here at First Up, that it's been quite hard to watch people's physical 100 on their Netflix password, because Netflix is cracking down on these passwords and they say it's working.
Yeah, you know, and we thought there'd be a viewer revolt against Netflix, you know, anarchy in the streaming world. But no, it turns out we're actually pretty compliant. Netflix saying that their password crackdown, wildly unpopular when it came in, is working. They reported their quarterly earnings at the end of last week, and the company revealing that it added 9.3 million customers, subscribers, in the first quarter of the year. That's like nearly two New Zealands. And meaning they now have a total of nearly 270 million subscribers around the world. Their profits rose, their revenue also rose, nearly 15% to just under 16 billion New Zealand dollars just for the quarter. But it still came in below expectations. And that's Wall Street for you. And a former Netflix director, Simon Gallagher, he told the BBC that this is definitely a tailwind from the crackdown on password sharing. But interestingly, Netflix told shareholders that they will soon stop reporting subscriber numbers. Some investors saw that as an indication that Netflix's subscriber numbers are slowing, and they don't want to share that, basically. And it's a similar move to other major media companies. You know, we had Facebook going to Meta, and X, formerly Twitter, they also stopped reporting active user numbers when their growth numbers slowed. And Netflix are doing a similar thing. Even though they saw that big jump, they are expecting things to slow down. And perhaps we will see Netflix carry on with more unpopular moves, like, you know, advertising.
Hang on.
Yeah, I know. This is groundbreaking stuff, right? Advertising. You know, you pay for something to stream, ad-free streaming, but no, advertising has found its way into that. Netflix is also pushing into sports and video games as well.
Yep.
So, big diversification push by Netflix, and seems like us subscribers are just going to follow along and keep lining their pockets.
Well, yeah, I don't mind, though. They turn out beautiful big productions, so I'm okay.
Exactly, can't complain when you do that.
No, thank you very much. And Anand Zaki, you can hear more from the business team on Morning Report this morning at 10 to 7. Let's go see what the money market is doing. Our New Zealand dollar trading around the world at 58.9 US cents, 91.76 Australian cents, 47.6 British pence, 55.27 euro cents, 91.08 Japanese yen, and 4.26 yuan. There are not a lot of better times to summon a sportsman to the microphone than when his national cricket team has just won a game, but that's what we'll have Barry Guy do. Kia ora, Barry. Welcome back to the airwaves. Nice to hear your voice. Victory. T20 victory. Oh, let's go New Zealand.
I was going to say, you're obviously slightly ahead of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've just won the Black Caps have just won the third T20 international in Pakistan in Rawalpindi. Primarily, thank you to Mark Chapman. 87 off 42 balls. They chased down 179. Got there for the loss of 3 wickets with, how many is that? 6-10 balls to spare.
Yeah.
So it's 1-1 going into the last two in Lahore. So well done to them, especially after getting a bit of a hiding yesterday, all out for 90.
Hmm.
Mark Chapman gets more or less 90 on his own. So, so well done to him.
Everyone get out of his way, quite frankly. That should
He's done it for a few years. He's sort of been one of those guys that sort of, doesn't get the star treatment or anything, but he's been producing the goods for a couple of years now. So well done to him. Just quickly, well done to Taupo too for the supercars round. It appears everyone's pretty happy with that. I know a number of people that went along, and apart from the weather, they really enjoyed it there also. What about your weekend, Nathan, in particular that you watched?
Oh, I watched lots of stuff. I'll tell you what, it's a friend of mine, Steve Hale, shout out Steve. He said, I'd never stay up to watch a Force game, but, well, the novelty of the Crusaders possibly losing, I might stay up for that. And he did in the end. That is weird to get crumpled through the middle by the Force.
Yeah, jeepers. Highlanders too.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and it'd be interesting to see. I'm waiting to hear the news about Asafa Omoa, the Hurricanes hooker.
Oh yeah.
He went off with a knee injury, so we'll interesting to see what comes out of that in the next couple of days. Also a shout out to the Fault Line event that was held in Wellington over the weekend. More or less follows the Fault Line. You could either mountain bike it or run it. The longest was 100 miles, then it went to 100 kilometres and that sort of thing. A friend did ran it in about 16 hours or something like that. So, just terrible as far as I'm concerned. But I also bumped into a couple of your biggest fans who couldn't stop chirping about you, but it's all right. Nathan, I set them straight.
Oh, good. I'm pleased you did, Barry. That's good. Yeah. They should finish that long race at a shopping mall because that's where those vibrating chairs are, because I think I'd want to sit in one of those with my legs
It was down by the waterfront. I think a few just jumped into the water afterwards.
Yeah, there we go. Good to hear you back, Barry. Thank you.
Cheers,
there he is. Barry Guy, back from overseas travels with us here at First Up. Okay, between now and 6 o'clock, we've got a couple of really interesting stories for you. Obviously, we'll catch up with what's happening on Morning Report. But still to come, we talk the Tate Music Awards with Hamilton music reviewer Max Johns. And also, Leonard Powell was at the Helberg Games over the weekend and met some awesome young athletes. The professionals of Morning Report are here after 6 for a quick preview of our flagship news program. It's Ingrid Hipkiss. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Okay, very, very busy Monday for us. We're looking at the fast-tracking consenting bill. Of course, this has been in the news a lot. New controversy now. Labor claiming that worried about bias creeping into the proposed fast list, what's going to be on the list, because on Friday, some of those companies were invited to make an application. Now, some of the companies who were invited have actually made donations to the ACT Party, International Party, in the past. So the Labour Party says that brings up concerns about bias. We'll be talking to all parties about that one. The government's also reforming financial services. This is around the how you get a loan. And they're saying that the rules were too strict for a while there. They're looking at relaxing those. So we'll be taking a good look at that too. And Health New Zealand is cracking down on staff overtime and leave balances and filling in for sick leave and all that kind of stuff in a bid to save money. But, of course, that has raised concerns about frontline staff and what happens if the nurses are sick and there's
exactly
no one there. So we'll be asking Health New Zealand about that one too.
All right. Thank you very much. Cheers. Well, the finest musicians in the land will assemble in Auckland tomorrow night for the 2024 Tate Music Prize. The award, named, of course, after the legendary music journalist Dylan Tate, one of the pioneers of independent music media in New Zealand. 8 albums have been selected as finalists, but they were whittled down from a list of 68 nominations. And one mad keen music fan decided to review all 68. His name is Max Johns. He wrote the micro reviews of the entries for the Hamilton Underground Press website. And I asked him, 68, where did you get that idea from?
When I first saw that nominations were out, I thought, oh, there's always about 10 albums up for the Tate Prize, so I'll listen to all of them. I didn't realise there was a long list before there was a short list. So I'd kind of committed to the idea before I realised what I'd bitten off. And then I thought, well, I'll write for a little website called Hamilton Underground Press. Well, there's a couple of other guys who spend time on it too. Maybe they'll help me out. So I started and let them know. You know, you guys want to help out too? And I got crickets from them. So suddenly I was listening to 68 albums all by myself.
That takes up some amount of time. I know some people that are still trying to get through a Netflix series with 10 episodes. Tell me about, how do you find the time for 68?
Luckily, I work from home and don't have too many meetings. So a lot of them were sort of on in the background while I was tapping a keyboard doing what I do, which meant that so long as I stuck to my only listen to it once rule, and just took a couple of notes while things were on, I'd listen to them during the day, write them up that evening. If it happened to be my lunch break, then some lucky albums got to be listened to properly on headphones while I was taking a walk around the block. But it was done for speed rather than accuracy, I think is fair to say.
So you listen to each album once. In my old music radio days here, Max, I remember that you'd get, you know, the A&R people would come around and they'd play it to you and you'd be... Yeah, and they'd go, it's a grower, it's a grower, it'll grow on you, it'll grow on you like that. Is it fair to give them just one listen?
No, not really. And there were some albums where I had to say, look, after one listen, I can't wrap my head around this. What I was trying to do was just let people have a read of what I'd done and then work out which ones they might want to dip into, rather than give the authoritative, here is definitely how good all these things are. But no, you're right. It's not fair. It's the best I could do in the 2 weeks I had, though.
And did you keep a ranking system? Like, how do you do this?
I wasn't doing star ratings. I wasn't doing anything like that. I did think that I'd pull out my top 10 because that's how many would go through to the shortlist. Hmm. So I didn't rank those 10 that I picked. Four of them ended up in the real final as well. But no, I didn't want to try to put rankings out of 10 on 68 different things.
I'm thinking here, though, you've got to be honest, right? Because there will be some that appeal to you straight away, and you don't have to say what their names are, but honestly, there must have been some that you're about three songs in, and you're like, how long is this? It seems like a slog.
There was one album in particular which it just was not my genre. You can't love everything.
Yeah.
I'd committed to the listen through. I could have written most of the paragraph after the first 7 or 8 minutes. But then there were other albums where I thought I had my opinions all fleshed out, and then the second half would blow me away. I don't know how to pronounce it. There's an artist called Cerebii, I think. And the second half of that album just built wonderfully on top of the start of it and completely changed my opinion of it. Murmurtooth as well, who coupled up with a DJ called Lars. That album started off feeling like the DJ was just doing the same thing over and over. But by the end of it, I was thinking, I've got to go back and check what they were starting out with here because I've built on things really well.
Yeah, because actually you've hit on an interesting part here, because it's very easy to review things that you're really into, right? You're like, this is great. Tell us about that part of you where you go, all right, what's the hat you put on to go, I'm going to review this album that actually doesn't speak to me, but, you know, like, how do I get through this? Like, where's the part that you head to where you go, I'm going to give this the time it deserves?
If I got it right, what I would have done is explained what the music is, tried not to let on whether it's my thing or not. What are these people trying to do with this music they're making? And then much less of my time on, you know, how well did they do it? But I think that if you can tell people this is a piece of Polynesian thrash metal or this is a piece of ambient electronica, you know, they're halfway there to knowing whether they want to listen to it for themselves or not. I don't think reviews need to be what they were 30 years ago. You're no longer trying to tell someone you should invest $30 in this CD. You're saying, hey, click a link and spend a few minutes seeing if this is for you. So I think the getting across the quality of the thing is less important than getting across, this is what you'll get if you listen to it yourself.
How do you feel? You guys are very closely almost out on your own doing this depleted nature of music journalism in New Zealand. How do you feel about it?
I absolutely hate it. We're a tiny, tiny website. We're all volunteers. We do what we can to talk with bands who are coming through Hamilton or who are from Hamilton. That's as much as we can possibly do. But, you know, Chris Schultz, who writes The Boiler Room, he's been tracking all of the things that are disappearing. You know, Time Out's gone and the magazines we used to read are all gone. And, yeah, it feels like there's a huge gap now, which is strange because it's so much easier than ever to actually listen to music, but to work out what you want to listen to or to find things that your friends might like as well, I think it's getting harder.
We should get to this part now, the drum roll. Obvious question coming your way there. Who's going to win the Tate prize? But I'd like to hear from you a heart answer and a head answer. So tell me about the Tate prize winners as far as you're concerned, Max.
My head tells me that we're going to see the first repeat winner. I think it'll probably be Unknown Mortal Orchestra. If it's not, I think Tom Scott will win his second Tate prize. He's already got it once with Avondale Bowling Club, and I think he'll win with Homebrew if UMO don't get it. My heart answer, I would love to see Dick Move with their album Wet walk away with it. They're about to go to Europe and play 21 shows in 21 days, and on stage they are amazing. So I'd love to see them get a little boost in their sales before they take off.
That's Max Johns, reviewer for the Hamilton Underground Press website. 8-6, a busy weekend here in Auckland, particularly with the Halberg Games taking place at King's College. The event is run by the Halberg Foundation and is open to athletes aged from 8 to 21 with a physical disability or visual impairment. 230 competitors from 15 regions came along to take part in all sorts of races, matches and activities. Our reporter Leonard Powell went along to soak up the action.
I want to hear your region making some noise. Ready? 3, 2, 1, make some noise.
Hi, my name's John Sigurdsson. I'm the event manager for the Halberg Games. We are on site at King's College for the 24 edition. Started today, and we've got 3 days of sport, fun, lots of games for 230 physically and visually impaired athletes from around New Zealand.
People who are listening right now are going to be wondering what on earth is going on in the background right now. What have we got around us?
So we're standing at the covered court, and in this court we've got CrossFit running session, which is a lot of the noise. We've got Rowing New Zealand here doing some races on some rowing ergs. Right behind us is the swimming, and in the gym beside us we've got Pauchi football. Outside on the grass we've got a rock climbing wall set up, disc golf, and we've got hunger ball coming in.
And just lastly, what got you into it and what do you love about it?
My mum has MS, so we grew up around disability. I also always loved sport. I didn't think I'd be able to combine the two. But I've been with the Halberg Foundation 16 years and I can't see myself going anywhere else. Huge passion, just helping kids, being in a sport environment and seeing just massive amount of moments of joy around.
Over at the swimming pool, I witnessed some of the joy John Sigurdsson is talking about. 12-year-old Zach Schultz, who lives with cerebral palsy, has just finished a race and is grinning from ear to ear.
I hear you just had a PB, Zach. Tell me about it.
I swam the 25-metre free and I got 20.07 and my previous time was 22 seconds.
Wow, you took 2 seconds off. How do you feel to get the PB?
Happy, and I also got second. It's really fun and I get to be with the Waikato. Go Waikato. Waikato is the best.
In the gymnasium next to the pool, a fierce game of power chair football is taking place. Perry Tewini is watching on and breaks down the action.
Yeah, so these guys are in a real-wheel drive power chair and they have like a little frame around them to protect their bodies, and just like soccer, they've got to try and link up with their friends and try and nail it into the goal. But yeah, some of the skills on them is pretty unreal, you know, especially despite, you know, some got cerebral palsy, spinal bifida, spinal cord injuries, and they're just giving it a good go.
Perry became a quadriplegic 3 years ago and now works as a peer support at Spinal Support NZ.
To be able to give people an opportunity to understand that there's life beyond your disability, there's work there that needs to be done, and really about teaching the wider community, especially our able-bodied people, to understand that people with disabilities can still give as much as what they had when they didn't have a disability. So yeah, that's what it's about, is just about giving opportunity to people less likely to get a chance, really.
The game between Bay of Plenty and Waikato wraps up, highlighted by star player and New Zealand representative Cooper Pulini. Back out at the pool, Amelie Baines is replenishing with some Oreos after doing the 50-metre freestyle race. She's wrapped up in a foil jacket to keep warm.
I've always seen these blankets, like these foil, silver foil, but I've never used one. What's it like in there? I'm curious.
It doesn't look like it keeps you warm, but it actually really does.
Yeah. How long have you been in the wheelchair, Amelie? And tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, since I was like 2 or 3, right? I've got CP in my legs. CP is cerebral palsy, so it's like where the muscles they pull in. They're basically like spaghetti messages, and your brain is like getting the wrong messages to wrong parts of your body. So that's what CP is.
Cheering on from poolside is Jacob Openshaw Clark, sporting bright green hair. His father Steve is in on the action too, rocking a green goatee. Jacob says it's all in support of the mighty Manawatu.
I've got green hair and it's all thanks to hair chalk. Like you literally just wet your hair and just run the chalk over it and it leaves behind a really, really great finish and it seems to grab a lot of attention.
And what are you competing in, Jacob?
I've just competed in boccia, which is almost like a petanque game. We have to roll the ball. And then I'm just watching here at swimming. And then tomorrow I'm actually doing a wheelchair race and some shot put and discus. And yeah, and then on Sunday we're doing a cricket and badminton, which will be quite cool.
It's a busy games for you.
Oh yes, it's always busy, but it's always worth it in the end.
And do you see some familiar faces when you come back? Is that quite nice?
Oh yes, it's quite cool because like a lot of these kids might not necessarily have anyone to relate to. So to see these people just having a really fun time, seeing people that they can talk to and talk to about similar stuff is really cool to see. The best part about it is just seeing people interacting and just all the friendships that people make. And sometimes those friendships can carry on for life, which is pretty amazing.
Lovely. If you weren't moved by that, then what, you're not human. That was Jacob Openshaw-Clark ending that report from Leonard Powell on what sounds like a fun weekend. And I love hearing that. I like hearing people just having a good time. Well, that is our program for this morning. Thank you very much for your patronage today. Morning Report is next with Ingrid and Corin. The good thing is we put this into a handy-dandy podcast that you can take with you when you miss us during the day. Isn't that lovely? It's a bit like one of those people that have a monitor at home to watch their dog. It's like that. If you miss your dog, you look at that on your phone. It's the same. Take us with us in your podcast. From all of us here at First Up, have a wonderful day. We'll be back live in your ears. Up, bobble.